through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. I am Rob Watson, and you are listening to Rated LGBT Radio. So, this show's going to feel a little bit like deja vu, although if you aren't familiar with the subject that we'll be talking about, you probably have lived in a box on a deserted island somewhere, devoid of any media, because this is what I think a lot of people in our country are talking about. We have some of the most bizarre behavior by a president in the history of having presidents. And ironically, it falls across an issue that we talked about last week. I had on last week Matthew Thorne with OutServe and Brody Levesque, seasoned journalist. We talked about an issue that went before Congress. The troops rose up, pardon the expression, the good guys rose up, defeated these very bad amendments that were stuck on bills. Matt was exhausted from his advocacy work. Brody was exhausted from reporting on it. And we were just having a good old congratulatory time about that being put to bed. And we were looking forward to it maybe going to the Senate. We pretty much figured it was going to be dead on arrival there, so no problem there. And then it all fell apart in the hands of the great orange one in the White House. And I'm going to bring on my guests, and they will fill us in on what happened, what's going on after that, and what will come, and some of their reactions to that. Also, I'm really, really pleased that in addition to Matt Thorne, executive director of OutServe, and Brody Levesque, seasoned journalist, I am also going to be welcoming Autumn Sandeen, who is a fantastic transgender advocate, activist, and I can't wait to speak to her as well. And I'm sure it has been quite a few days in her world as well. So without further ado, I want to bring on Brody Levesque. Brody, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm good. You must be exhausted.
I can tell you that the last 24 hours have not been boatloads of fun. That is true.
Okay. All right. Well, as long as you promise not to fall asleep in the middle of the show, we're good.
We're good.
We're good. Okay. So, Brody, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to let you, you're the storyteller among us. So before I bring on Matt, can you just tell us what happened early one morning this week where the world went crazy?
Essentially what had happened was the Freedom Caucus in the House of Representatives decided that they were going to buck on the NDAA, and they wanted their rule that we had discussed last week, which is known as the Hartzler Amendment, that essentially would have made the Defense Department unable to take care of its trans service members the same way it takes care of its regular service members in terms of medical costs and medical care. And it was a really onerous amendment that the House Freedom Caucus decided they wanted to keep pushing this. They enlisted the assistance of the Vice President of the National, the Vice President of the United States, and some other people on the national anti-LGBT organizations to help them in that effort. We have since found out that that also included a couple of active duty military chaplains. The night before the now infamous tweets of yesterday, Vice President Pence had spoken with the president while the president was en route to Ohio for a political rally. He called the plane. My sources are telling me that on the trip back, he called the plane again. Then Wednesday morning early, there was a staff meeting, a discussion in the White House regarding pushing Speaker Ryan and the House leadership on the Rules Committee to go ahead and push this this roll through on the NDA. And it got a lot of opposition because the Speaker of the House and Representative Sessions really didn't want to do that. And the Vice President and Steve Bannon was pushing hard on this particular thing, and joining them was White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Legislative Affairs Rick Dearborn and Deputy Special Assistant to the President for Legislative Affairs Paul Teller, and then a member of President Pence's personal staff. Then at 8:55 yesterday morning, the President cut loose with the first tweet. There was about a nine-minute delay, which unfortunately was interpreted by the Pentagon as maybe this guy's going to start World War III. And then the second and third parts of the tweet, and essentially boiled it down to, I'm not going to allow and I'm going to ban transgender service. Now, the thing about this was that he completely blindsided the Pentagon. The Pentagon did not know. The Secretary of Defense, right, who's on holiday, wasn't aware of this. None of the senior members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, even the secretaries of the services across the river across the Anacostia at Homeland Security Coast Guard, the commandant, you know, was caught off guard. General Kelly, who's Department of Homeland Security Secretary. I mean, this literally was just boom. No one knew.
Right.
And then came the scramble. Yeah.
Yeah. And the really ironic part of what you just shared is that the tweet itself just didn't just say, I'm banning transgender service. He specifically stated that he had consulted with his generals and based on their recommendation that he felt that this was what he had to do, which is a lie.
I have a source telling me that the so-called military generals he was, you know, being advised by were, in fact, two of these military chaplains and apparently at least one general officer. But outside of that, that's all we've got. I think the vast majority of the push on this was actually the Vice President, Steve Bannon, and, of course, the other two gentlemen that I mentioned, along with members of the House Freedom Caucus, who were more than bent out of shape that they weren't going to get the Hartzler Amendment pushed through. This has been a huge social thing with them. I mean, this has been their driving force. And as Matt will tell you when he gets on, you know, this is what OutServe, American Military Partners, the folks at the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the People to Human Rights Campaign, SPARTA, which is Sue Fulton and her crew. This is actually what they were fighting. And when we talk to Autumn, you're going to be hearing from her about how this has negatively impacted trans service members, because she's been talking to them. So this has literally been caught everybody off guard, caught everybody by surprise, and then just pure ugliness.
Right. But, I, you know, to be fair, I can understand the word chaplain and the word general sound kind of alike, so, you know, we can understand his confusion. So, with that,
you're willing to let him have it black. I'm
not. With that, I am going to bring on Matt, because again, another person who I'm sure is, if Matt, if you even have a voice left, I will be surprised. But welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I think you are number 240.
You actually scared me. I thought, oh God, he really doesn't have a voice.
No, I actually, you're I think interview 244. I've done 244 interviews in the last 36 hours in 7 different countries. So I'm quite tired, needless to say.
Yeah, I can believe it. I'm only glad that I got you first last week, although we didn't know what was coming. So, Matt, where were you when you saw this tweet and heard the news, and what was your first reaction to it?
I had just gotten back from the gym and was in the process of trying to get my day started, and I always have MSNBC on my television as I'm getting ready, and all of a sudden, I think it switched over from Morning Joe to Stephanie Ruhle, and then all of a sudden was just breaking news across the bottom, and then my phone just started ringing off the hook. And I was just like trying to get a grasp of what was actually going on. I mean, it completely caught me, completely fundamentally caught me off guard.
Right. And what did you, apart from the fact that all of a sudden you were the national go-to guy, which I'm sure that is exactly who you are at this point on this particular story. What did you think? You and I and Brody had just had this conversation that, you know, it was like calm, you know, yay, that's put to bed. And all of a sudden this literally atom bomb on this issue drops. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think an atom bomb is a good example. It's a good description for it. I immediately started calling my legal team and my board of directors and was just, you know, like, you need to turn on the news now and we need to start mobilizing what our response is going to be. And, you know, I went also immediately to the over 15,000 service members that we have currently serving around the world and what their reaction was going to be to this. You know, the military is a very prides itself on being very cohesive and very, very methodical in how it conducts itself. It doesn't do anything very, very quickly. In fact, when we lifted the ban on transgender service, they had a year study prior to that before Secretary Carter came out and lifted the ban. They don't do policy shifts like this quickly, very well, or quite frankly at all. So I was just flabbergasted that this was the way that the commander in chief, although I think he deserves less credit in that arena,
right,
was announcing a massive policy shift. We've had open transgender service for over a year, and you are abruptly telling over 15,000 people that we're going to fire you.
Yeah, it's unconscionable. It's a policy shift. I mean, to your point, a policy shift, whatever it is, like, you know, you have to show up at 8:30 every single morning, no matter what new times change, you know, here you go. You know, throwing something like that out this way would have been disruptive. To do it in a way where you are literally stripping people's careers and aspirations and well-being and all of that, I mean, going back to the atom bomb analogy, I mean that actually pretty literally, that's what happened. What were the reactions?
Go ahead.
Well, no, go ahead and say what you were going to say.
Well, the other aspect of this is, we don't tweet federal policy in this country. We have a constitution and we have laws and we have a government that, you know, has a process and a way of doing these things. And, you know, if this is his intention, which he hasn't even followed through on from the tweets yesterday, you know, putting it on Twitter we're still in limbo. We have no idea there's no directive to the Secretary of Defense. There's no directive to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. There's nothing. He has given nothing, and we don't tweet federal policy in this country. And I think the reaction that you've seen from Senator McCain and Senator Hatch and Democrats up and down, you know, different levels of government is their statements are fundamentally true. You know, what are you doing? You are throwing chaos into this system for no reason whatsoever. And quite frankly, it's borderline a national security issue, because now we have service members who have anxiety and concern over what this actually means for them, who are deployed in combat zones and hotspots that we have around the world. We have two conflicts that we're still engaged in, with Afghanistan and Iraq, and we have two that are percolating that we don't know what our involvement is going to be, with North Korea and Syria. This is a massive chaos. You know, this is, his tweets have injected so much chaos into the system, and he talks about readiness in his tweets. Well, he's undermining readiness by doing those tweets.
I would say what you just said is an understatement. It sounds like he not only undermined readiness, he undermined it in an unprecedented level, at a deep core level. I mean, there's never, I can't even think of any other precedent like this where readiness has been more threatened. by this kind of behavior. Matt, though, I want to go back to what you originally said, though, about what were your initial contacts with people who are actually deployed and actually under this? What were their reactions?
Excuse me. I mean, massive concern, anxiety. You know, I will say one of the bright spots in the last 36 hours has been a lot of stories that we've heard of transgender service members just being overly welcomed by their commands and by their fellow mm-hmm. service members and their service members saying, "We have your back. You know, this tweet doesn't mean anything. It doesn't change the policy." So that has been one of the few bright spots in the last 36 hours that, you know, we've had such a cohesion of transgender service members who are in units and their units are just overwhelmingly just backing them up. But there is just an undue burden that the president has now put on them of what their status is actually going to be, because there is no, he has to go beyond his little social media fantasy that he has, and he has to put something in writing if this is what he's going to do. And if he's right. just going to leave it in place in social, you know, media universe, well, then that was a deplorable act by this commander in chief.
Right. Right. I want to bring on Autumn now. And Brody, if you would, because you are much more familiar with Autumn's background, I'd like you to give us an introduction to Autumn and welcome her to the show.
That would be my absolute pleasure. Autumn is a friend. She is a contributing writer to LGBT Weekly in San Diego. She's a longtime contributing editor and writer to Trans Advocate magazine out of Houston, Texas. She is a former first-class fire controlman in the U.S. Navy. She served from 1980 to 2000. And Autumn, besides being a transgender activist and Navy veteran, was the first U.S. service member who was successful in getting the Department of Defense to publicly change her gender identification on all of her military records. And as many people who watch the various protests against Don't Ask, Don't Tell will probably remember, she was one of the infamous six that handcuffed themselves to the north fence of the White House during the discussions over the repeal and removal of that policy. She's a longtime blogger and writer. She used to write for Pam Spalding, who, as you know, ran a very famous blog, Pam's House Blend, out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's with extreme pleasure I bring Autumn on.
Autumn, welcome to the show. Very, very honored to have you on.
To be here.
I bet you thought you weren't actually
great
ever going to get to talk.
Mind you, but it's...
All right. So, Autumn, I want to ask you, and one thing, too, I have to tell you, I have many, many transgender friends, and you are the first transgender person I have actually spoken to live since this went down. I have to share with you before I ask you what your reaction was, but I was more deeply appalled by this behavior of a cisgender person towards the transgender community than I virtually have on any other issue. And I have to tell you, my emotional reaction was immediately being embarrassed to be cisgender because I didn't want to be anywhere near the box that this came out of. So from that perspective, I do want to offer on behalf of cisgender people everywhere my utmost apologies that transgender people are being treated this way. But now I want to know, what was your reaction when you heard this come out? What were your thoughts?
My first reaction was this, was getting, strangely enough, you know, Matt was talking about his phone and such going off the hook. My first wake up was the UK's Channel 4 contacting me and wanting to get me on the air to talk about this. So I hadn't heard anything until, you know, the BBC is contacting me. So this is like the weirdest morning, yesterday morning, waking up to find out that my brothers and sisters in the military are having you know, it's just the strangest thing, being told you're going to be able to serve openly a year or so ago, and now being told you came out and now we're going to kick you all out. At least that's what the tweet sounded like. So it just was, there's no other word but shocking to describe how I felt and felt for all my transgender active duty and reservist peers.
You bring up an enormously good point, because that this is sort of like that place in a horror movie where, you know, the main character is made to feel completely safe. You know, the eerie music goes away, it gets really calm, and all of a sudden, you know, the monster appears and starts slashing away unexpectedly.
I would just echo what Matt was saying. You know, everybody is just kind of, you know, you're getting the three basic responses out of folk. It's, you know, they're getting, from what I'm hearing, they're getting the, you know, their peers know that they're out transgender and are saying, we've got your back. But the two reactions I'm hearing most from my peers are, the hell you say you're kicking me out, and I'm frightened as hell. What are they doing?
Right.
And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I'm probably putting more emotion into it than they're actually expressing to me. But it's just, you know, the president has injected a lot of unnecessary anxiety into people who are doing, you know, doing what they're asked to be told in the field, in our military conflicts, and doing it very well, like they're supposed to be doing it. And he's talking about, you know, all the things that Matt brought up. And here they are. They've just had a whole bunch of mess thrown into their lives. And it wasn't done because they're doing a bad job or something was done horribly. It's strictly because this is literally politics going on,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
has
definitely.
Nothing to do with how they're doing their jobs. It's
mm-hmm.
absolutely horrible.
Right. And
I should point out, to kind of back up what Autumn just said, Stephen Losey, who I know, who writes for the Air Force Times, did a profile piece yesterday morning on Air Force Staff Sergeant Logan Ireland. Now, Sergeant Ireland is a security forces airman. Quite frankly, from the picture that was published of him, he looks like John Cena from World Federation Wrestling. And the staff sergeant said, and I'm quoting the headline here in the Air Force Times, "I would like to see them try to kick me out of my military." Now, to echo what Autumn just said and what Matt has said, the very picture of Staff Sergeant Ireland is now on the Facebook cover page for the Defense Acquisition University, which is actually part of the Department of Defense. It is a government-run training organization, and there you have a picture of the staff sergeant. So that's kind of the dynamics of some of the reaction, at least from what we as journalists are hearing.
Right. No, I think that, and actually I applaud that kind of reaction. I mean, I think that speaks to the people we're talking about. We're talking about 15,000 people who are essentially brave. I mean, that is part of their core. They're brave to have done what they've done in terms of their own self-actualization, and they're brave in the career that they've chosen to pursue. I mean, brave and courage are part of the fabric of the people who are being attacked, which is just the ultimate irony. Autumn, I want to ask you, though, let's just say, for sake of argument, let's say that, to Matt's point, this doesn't leave the Twitter universe, and Donald Trump doesn't have the organizational wherewithal to actually make something happen. What does this do to the trust factor of those troops, even if they are ultimately left alone?
Wow. I'm just, I can't really speak for them on that. I do know if I was still active duty and this kind of yanking around was done, I just would feel a horrible amount of distrust of whatever this president was going to do next. I just would be waiting for the next shoe to drop, and then the next shoe after that, and the next shoe after that. I mean, it's not just, you know, this is the difference about working for the government where your life and death is on the line. This is not shoe dropping that's inconsequential. This is shoe dropping where if something happens, it could impact your life, you know, actually end your life or injury or something else. These are like real consequential things. If you're distracted when you need to be not distracted doing your job, that can have consequences. And the military is quite aware of that. So I can't speak for them, but I know what I would be feeling if I were in their shoes. And it would be just, what's the next shoe?
Right. And the irony of what you just said is we're dealing with, in theory, this large group of people who philosophically claim to be for small government, no interference, et cetera, and yet everything they want to do is basically devastating lives on a massive scale. It's just really mind-boggling, the paradox.
Yeah, they're blowing up the paradigms of a cohesive functioning military by how they're running the military in a non-cohesive, non-functioning manner. It's just, this was, and again, by not even bringing in the Department of Defense people to make huge Department of Defense policy, this is just, it's amazing. Just, and I don't mean that in the good sense of the word amazing.
Right. Yeah, car wreck amazing. Car wreck, massive
train pilot. Wreck amazing, right.
You right, get right.
Yeah,
a tsunami hitting on top of it, yeah. No, it's,
I think
yeah.
Train wreck would probably be better.
Yeah.
Matt would know because he's been obviously in between interviews in the thick of it in terms of dealing with the service people themselves, and he's been hearing, of course, from his chapters and from Sue Fulton and some of theirs. I'd like to point out here one thing that's kind of very important, and that's the fact that earlier today, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Marine General Joseph Dunford, sent out a memorandum to all commands that the Pentagon would not implement a ban on transgender troops, and I quote the general, until the president's direction has been received by the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary has issued implementation guidance. Until that point, the general wrote, there will be no modifications to the current policy, and we will continue to treat all of our personnel with respect. Now, that said, the problem here, and I'll let Matt cover or Autumn cover this, but that said, it is still unsettling because you don't have definitive policy. And when you have the White House press secretary stand in front of us in the press corps and tell us that they're going to be working it out with the Defense Department, then the Defense Department is saying, no, you brought this here, you brought it to the table, you need to deal with it. You can see where the disconnect is.
Right.
And that level of uncertainty causes greater problems because, as Matt has discussed before previously, military personnel policy is not something that's done by rote. It's not something that's done by tweet. It is not something that's done by a Facebook post. Military policy is crafted after a considerable amount of effort goes into it in terms of study, in terms of contributions being made by the major commands that are affected by whatever the policy is going to be, and then finally by the four service secretaries, the Joint Chiefs, the Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. So this is not one of those things that's just willy-nilly. The United States military, and we saw this during the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but we've seen it generally with military policy, does not just suddenly snap its fingers, and that's the way it's going to be. And The other part of this, as Autumn pointed out, is from a puritanical sense, this is the worst of targeted partisan politics. Matt was on earlier today on a radio show that I listened in part to with one of our old nemesis. In fact, Autumn will recognize this name, Eileen Donnelly, who is the head of a Center for Military Readiness. Now, I need to point out that Ms. Donnelly, A, has never served in the armed forces. She's been called upon as a so-called expert, and I find it highly amusing that the think tank she runs is out of the basement of her suburban Detroit home in Highland Park, Michigan. So I find that a little ironic that she's an expert, okay? But this is the problem. It is a nearly theocratic attack on the trans community without any point in terms of understanding or clear cut in how the military does its job. The sources I'm being told from within the Defense Department are more or less along the lines of, we don't want this. This is bullshit. We don't need it.
Right, right. Well, actually, and on that point, Brody, everybody I've looked at, every place where they have gone for feedback, universally, I am not finding a huge voice of, oh, yeah, we needed to do this anywhere. I mean, the support for it is, or the complete lack of it is deafening. But before we go to the reality of how this would or would not be implemented, Matt, you gave an interview, and I think it was CNN, that you kind of went into the worst case scenario. So let's go there first. If, let's say, for whatever reason, Trump actually got his proverbial act together on this, and this order became a reality, what, in your expert opinion, do you think is the way this would be carried out? And what could be the worst case and potentially least worst case scenario on it?
Well, first, let me preface, I don't want to get in this man's head, quite frankly. I don't know what he would even try to do or translate those tweets into actual policy. But the worst case scenario would be that he takes what he did via Twitter and translated it to essentially like an executive order or a memorandum to the Secretary of Defense. And which would, based on the tweets yesterday, which would be an all out ban. So those who are currently serving or would be discharged. And those who would like to serve would be barred from accessing into the military. Now there can be any variation thereof that they do, you know, that's less that strict. But that would be the worst case scenario, is that they just start removing everyone that's currently serving. But you were going to ask a question in the middle before.
Yeah, because I'm like Mr. really super dark person, but to me, besides what you just described, is the potential. And I'm not saying that the military hierarchy would sit still for this, but very realistically could follow a path like what happened when gay people were barred and lesbians were barred, and where the people who were disbarred under a dishonorable discharge. And that was how they were severed from the military.
Yeah. In theory, yes, that could happen. Once the president makes the decision or puts the executive order in place, it's going to be under the direction of the Secretary of Defense to implement it. My personal opinion is I don't believe that the Secretary of Defense will be that malicious or that vicious with this if his hand is forced by the president. You know, we've already been clearly communicated over the last 36 hours that the Department of Defense was not expecting this, is not relatively in favor of this, was not notified of this. You know, I've read a few reports where Secretary Mattis was quite frankly appalled by the president's decision-making on this, particularly via Twitter. So yes, in a very, very dark scenario, it could go to that level. I don't believe that the Secretary of Defense would go that route. And we would make sure that we would push. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Adam.
Because this is my question. Based on the old way they used to get rid of, well, they used to discharge trans people, was the personality disorder route, which is what they used to do also with, you know, PTSD folk and people with narcissism or were pedophiles. They used to discharge mm-hmm. transgender people. In fact, that was one of the warnings in the old 2000s version of the SLDN guide,
mm-hmm.
And where they warned about you might get a personality disorder. Could we be going back to that level of, well, you have gender dysphoria, so now we're going to get rid of you for that reason?
Yeah, and I think that these are like questions that are so unknown because we just don't have I could not even begin to fathom what the president's actually going to try to put in order. I go back to my point. I don't think that this Department of Defense is going, if their hand is forced on this issue, I think they're going to do the best that they can. I mean, if the president goes as far as saying the 15,000 plus individuals that we have serving who are trans are need to be discharged, I don't, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't, my sense given the interaction that the secretary has had with helping to kill the Hartzler Amendment 2 weeks ago, etc., I don't believe that he would go willy-nilly through and be like, we're getting rid of you on a dishonorable discharge. I don't know how they would separate them. That's a legal question that we are trying to ascertain right now. However, whatever the president decides to do, we have already started implementing with Lambda Legal a litigation strategy. We will challenge this in court, and we will ask a judge for an injunction to prevent the policy from even taking effect.
Now, to that point, I should also note, Matt, that we had conversations with the Defense Department about an hour ago. I talked to some of the sources, and there was a roundtable of several of us who are journalists that have been talking about this. You're absolutely correct that Secretary Mattis is extremely appalled by this. I think that the White House is going to find a lot of resistance to this. And I also think that you're absolutely correct. I think it's not going to be, as Autumn was saying, like it was previously, where they're going to hit you over the head with the biggest hammer that they can find when they issue the DD-214. I think that they are going to find themselves in a position where there's going to be a lot of static and pushback from this Defense Department, because this is one defense secretary who's, A, very pragmatic, B, has worn the uniform. Mind you, this was a 4-star Marine general. Okay, this is not a civilian per se. This is someone who was on active duty during Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This is a person who has served with the troops. This is a person who was basically a frontline commander. So this is not a person to be trifled with. And we have a defense secretary that, as you said, stepped up during the discussions and the debate over the Hartzler Amendment. This is a secretary of defense that, quite frankly, is upset about this entire thing. And he's especially upset, from what our sources are telling us, by the amount of cynical politics that are being played by this White House.
Yeah, I hear what you guys are saying, and I hope you're right. I really, really hope you're right. I have two points that I would throw in there, though. One is, remember, a week ago, we thought, oh, things are going smooth. You know, what could happen? What could go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And boom. And so, you know, it's like I hear what you're saying from the defense side and that organization and that, because you're dealing with sane people over there. But it's coming from this White House that is not sane. And, you know, I think the things that Autumn brought up should be real concerns, because not only is it how people are discharged, that is a label that they are then sent out in the public.
Uh-huh.
And in order to carry through with the insane scenario that is pushing this in the first place, in the characterization of what transgender people are, they have this would this if they were anywhere telling a truth, that would be the scenario. Is that because they're saying,
yeah,
you know, it's because you can't serve, which is ridiculous. But Brody, I've got go ahead, Matt. Sorry,
Red. I just wanted to say, I don't want to dismiss, you know, what Autumn is saying. Yes, this can get very, very dark and very, very quick. And we, you know, are preparing for all potentialities that could come out of this. I think, you know, what I was just trying to express was just, this was, you know, my kind of personal political analysis of where this Defense Department is. And I would also make a note that the president can give a memorandum or put an executive order in place. It is still the responsibility of the Department of Defense. The White House is not going to go in and discharge people. They do not have that authority to do that.
Right.
The Department of this would all rest within the Department of Defense. So once that memorandum would be executed from the West Wing, everything else rests with Secretary Mattis and the Department of Defense. So I just want to make that point very crystal clear. He has control of the situation after the president makes a decision, if the president makes a decision at this point.
Right.
I was not meaning to undermine
what either you or Brody were saying, because you guys know much better.
And this is Autumn. I just wanted to make sure that I was just asking, did Matt see it going back to that? You know, we go back to what it was defaulting before we started letting transgender people serve openly, because that was that's how they were discharged or could be discharged right up until they opened it up. Do we see them going back to discharging to what? And that's what I was basically asking Matt. Does he see it going to the exact same spot, or does he see something different? So I wasn't implying that's what they're going to do. That was like, what does Matt say? And that's why.
I was the alarmist here. I don't trust what they could do.
To Autumn's question, I think it would be very, very hard for them to go back to a pre-policy. They're going to have to come up with something different because we went from a Democratic administration to a Republican administration, but this policy has been in effect for a year, and this administration has been dealing with this has dealt with this policy for the last 6 months since they've taken over. They're going to have to come up with they're going to have to come up with a better scenario. They're not going to be able to just say we're going back to pre, you know, July 2016. Yeah. It's going to be really difficult. They'll be on very shaky legal ground if they try to do that, because the president, when President Obama lifted the policy, he had complete authority and the Secretary of Defense had authority to do so. So, and it has been tradition that, you know, administrations, courts have followed, you know, what each administration has done. So it would be really, really difficult for them to go back to when the ban was actually in place. They would be on shaky legal ground with that.
Can I inject something here that's just really kind of interesting that about all of this too? One of the things that this action has done has made a whole bunch of camera ready transgender people. I can't tell you how many transgender veterans I know who are, you know, even moderately famous in their hometowns as being transgender veterans are now on all their local stations in all their local towns discussing this. I was on two local stations in San Diego. I talked to a whole bunch of people who went on their local stations in all over the country. They have a whole bunch of people now. If this ban goes through, you're going to have a whole bunch of active duty transgender people on the air talking about how they're just want to serve their country and that they're now not allowed to just because of who they are. This is actually it's a good side effect of a horrible situation, because one of the things is people don't know who transgender people are, and to see a whole bunch of transgender veterans who have served their country and served them honorably going in front of the camera saying, I served my country and did it honorably across the nation. This has been America is getting introduced the idea of transgender veterans and active duty members in a way that, you know, this is a good thing coming out of a very bad thing. So
I would agree with that.
Brilliant.
I really would.
Think that's brilliant. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah.
I think the other part of this, too, Rob, is that we have to understand, and framing the context of what Autumn just said, is that it becomes a very personal thing. Years ago, I was fortunate enough to interview then Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Tip O'Neill. And Tip had this very, very famous saying, all politics is local. And then he would add, and politics is the art of perception and persuasion. I'll take that and go to the point that Autumn just made. I think that if you have enough active duty or reserve transgender service members sitting in front of these local television stations, talking to these local reporters, talking on these local radio stations, that now suddenly it becomes, as Speaker O'Neill pointed out, all politics is local. And I think fundamentally that there's going to be many Americans that are going to see this ploy by this administration, particularly this White House, this vice president, because this is the guy that's been pushing this the hardest, as not only cynical, which it is, but I think that they're also going to see this as fundamentally unfair. This is a targeting of American military personnel who are not only doing a job, but they are wearing the uniform of their country, and they are defending the right of those cynical people like the vice president, okay, to try and take away their freedom and to be engaged as a member of the U.S. Armed Forces. I think Autumn's right, and I know Matt agrees with this. I think
right.
that we need to understand that this puts it in a specific relief. All politics is local.
Right, and I want to there's a point there, Brody, you just stepped on that I want to also point out as another sideline thing where Autumn went took the high road and the silver lining, and I think it was brilliant. One of the dark linings of this is, to me, we look at the Trump administration and we look at all the bizarre behavior of Donald Trump and his lack of experience and, you know, the idiocy of putting something out like this on a tweet and with no plan, nothing traditional. And, you know, we look at the core of that as being, isn't it awful what Donald Trump is doing? However, the thing that concerns me around this one most of all is that it's Mike Pence. It's the vice president. It's the guy that's left
yes.
if Donald Trump gets impeached. You know, what is he thinking? And Brody, this is what I wanted to ask you and Matt about, is what is, you know, what should Mike Pence be in charge? Or do we have, you know, is it out of the frying pan into the fire with somebody who's even less cognizant of how government should be working?
Well,
I
think you're giving a lot of credit,
Rob. I don't necessarily think that, Matt. Why don't you characterize that, Matt? I'll let you characterize that, and then I've got something to add after you're done.
Well, I mean, like, I think we're giving a lot of credit to the fact that the vice president would become president. I mean, there's nothing to say that he's not, that he wouldn't go down with whatever else is percolating in that West Wing at the moment in time. So I think that's a, I think it's a big unknown. And given how his you know, for lack of a better word, sinister tactics have been over the last 30 days, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he was somehow involved in some other things that have plagued this White House. So I think the question would be, you know, do we have a President Ryan rather than a President Pence, if anything happened to the current president in terms of impeachment?
That's a fair question. I think the other part of it, too, is that I was speaking with the editor of an independent LGBT publication in Indianapolis, and Richard Sutton is the editor, and he's also someone who's covered Pence while he was governor of Indiana during the entire RFTA mess, and also, of course, covered Pence as a congressman from Indiana. And the thing that Mr. Sutton told me was that Pence has a tendency to be such an ideologue that in most cases he doesn't see, you know, the forest through the trees. And so And I think Matt's right in this regard. I think that there probably will be something else coming out of that White House. But let's say it doesn't, and we do end up with a President Pence. I think that he's going to end up with a Congress. And more importantly, I think he's going to end up with an American military and an American nation that is going to be so battle fatigued, if you will, from scandal and from just petty, there's no other way to put it, pettiness, that I don't think Pence is, it'll be a crippled presidency. I don't think he'll be able to, A, effectively govern, and B, he's not going to be able to run social policy such as this in such a way that it's going to be to the greater detriment of whether it's the American people or the American military.
Right, right. So I want to go to, you guys are all super, super smart, every one of you. Aside from, now I'm going to ask you to be betting people on what, given the power players that are in place, both on the defense side, the White House, and the vice president, what do you think is going to happen in the next few weeks? How do you envision this probably playing out, including that it has to be stopped by judicial fiat? How do you think this will play out?
Matt, you want to go first?
Well, I mean, like, I think anybody's guess is pretty good. There's part of me that thinks that this is just going to sit in Twitter universe for forever. And there's, you know, I guess that would be my optimistic side. My hopeful side would be that he doesn't move on this policy. He's gotten a ton of pushback from the Department of Defense. I think that is something that is notable today. It's highly unusual that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the secretary would publicly separate themselves from the West Wing and or from a White House, and they did so today and over the last 24 hours. You know, and we also had six Republican senators come out with statements and are now on record when it comes to transgender service members. So, you know, it's driving not only a wedge between him and the Department of Defense, but it's even driving a wedge between him and Congress. So, and he already has issues with Congress. So I think there's a really big question mark to this. I think there are players within the White House that are probably going to try to push him to do it, you know, with Steve Bannon and the vice president. But I hope that the backlash that he has received over the last 24 and going into tomorrow, 36, 48 hours from Congress, from the Department of Defense, from the LGBT community, from our allies, we have veterans organizations across this country saying, you know, this is too, you know, you're going way too far. My hope would be is that that has an effect. You know, this is a president that is close to narcissism, if not narcissistic. And I think he feeds off attention. And I think if he gets enough negative attention, it can push him in the other direction. But I think there's a lot of unknowns here. And it's a good question to ask. I don't know.
Right. Brody, you're on.
Oh, go ahead, Brody. I'll go last.
Okay, fair enough. I think from my perspective politically that Matt's probably correct. I think that this thing, unless Bannon and the White House staff and the vice president continue to keep pushing this thing, it is just going to sit there and stagnate. At some point, a more pragmatic person is going to come along and say, look, Mr. President, you have got the entire defense establishment arrayed against you. You have senior members of the Senate Armed Services Committee. You actually have the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. You have people, you know, of every stripe and persuasion across the United States, including seven governors, okay? Out of that seven governors, by the way, four of them are Republican, that are basically saying no, okay? It's a fundamental fairness issue at that point. And politically, you know, and again, this is a president who I get doesn't, you know, follow the norms. But there's got to be someone in that disastrous train wreck of a West Wing that's got enough political smarts, okay, to back him down and say, if you continue to press this forward, you're going to lose any and all support from your military, and as a commander-in-chief, you can't afford that. Autumn?
Right.
Yeah, I'm probably the least qualified to say what's going to happen because I am the least politically connected these days, being in San Diego and not being a reporter. I can tell you from the activist end, though, what will happen if it actually follows through from the direct action side. I've already talked to some veterans who, you know, approached me and said, maybe we need to go to the White House fence like Get Equal and Company did back in 2010 and make the similar kind of things and maybe this time work with groups together and come up with a concerted direct action and an insider-outsider plan that actually coordinates both sides together to come up with a plan so we get media visibility and a legal strategy and a possible legislative strategy. So what I'm already hearing from, if things really go south, you know, in the dark scenario that Matt's talking about, the direct action kind of oriented people I'm hearing are already talking about, you know, their dark scenarios as well. So the one thing I know is Get Equal will not be in the lead because their leadership is now turned out apparently in their latest Facebook posts as being a kind of an anti-military group. So that's changed, I guess, in the last 7 years. But yeah, so I can't tell you what, from the politics side of what's going on in D.C., but from the activist side, if things go in the darkest path, I can see activists changing their behavior to get more and to try and be more effective together in a way that is different than is done in the past at the same time, similar to how it was done in the past.
Right. So, Autumn, I've got a question for you that you may be a little more comfortable with. And we have, guys, we're down to our last 2 minutes. So just to let you know. And fortunately, our platform is not forgiving on that. We will be gone in 2 minutes. But, Autumn, what are your words? If the 15,000 people who are affected by this were listening right this minute, what kind of words of hope and inspiration would you want to give them at this point?
Stay strong. We win in the end. No kidding. We're going to win. Open transgender service is going to happen. It's not a question of if it happens. It's a question of when it happens. And if it doesn't happen under this president, it happens under the next president. So just stay strong. We win.
That's fantastic and beautiful, and I want to remember those words, actually. Any questions, guys, that I didn't ask? We have 90 seconds to make the last point here. What point
I just want to thank Matt Thorne and the folks at OutServe and Sparta and American Military Partners for the fine work they do. I really want to thank my friend Autumn for agreeing to come on. She's awesome. She's one of the best bloggers out there and trans activists. And Rob, I want to thank you for letting the three of us come on and really have a good discussion about this.
Well, I want to thank you guys not only for coming on tonight, but as I pointed out at the beginning of the show, you guys have all been working your everything off over this past week on your advocacy, and we would not succeed in this, and we wouldn't fulfill what Autumn predicted, which I dearly hope and I'm fully behind, if it wasn't for you guys. You are my heroes, and I want to thank you for being on. And I want to thank our listeners for listening tonight. You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio. Fine programming. We will be back next week with more hot topics. Also listen to Out in Santa Cruz on www.ksco.com Saturday, 7 p.m. Pacific time. We'll cover some of this subject and other hot topics there as well. So I look forward to hearing from you and you hearing from me. again next week. Same channel, same time. See you then.